Welcome to the Dentists, Implants, and Worms podcast, helping you navigate the world of dentistry. And here's your host, Dr. Justin Moody.
Welcome to Dentists, Implants, and Worms, episode number 8 in our podcast series, where we're helping you navigate the world of dentistry one vodka soda at a time. Tonight, our guest is Dr. Bill Williams from Atlanta, Georgia, all the way from Atlanta, Georgia. So, Bill, welcome to Studio 1A in downtown Rapid City. The mic is yours.
I am glad to be on a podcast with guys from Rapid City. I have never talked to anybody from Rapid City in my life, so this is wonderful.
Well, you got all three of us here, so we're good.
Yeah.
So are you telling me you have a bucket item, a bucket list of Mount Rushmore to see?
I do. And the Black Hills?
Yep. Excellent.
I want to come up there. I mean, I've been to most states in the Union, but those Dakotas just haven't reached out and gotten me yet, but I've got a good reason.
Well, there you go.
I came to Iowa for the first time in October, and I loved it. It was a great visit. So I'm sure if Iowa's good, South Dakota's got to be better.
Oh, that's a good answer. You've rated high so far. Hey, tell us, how'd you run across a couple podcasters from South Dakota?
Well, I'm always interested in what's going on in the world of dentistry because I teach and I look out there to see what's new all the time. I'm on Facebook and your information passed in front of me and I go, that is a unique name, and I was trying to find out what is the worm all about. Well, I did find out, and I was disappointed. You know, the worm is not even here tonight.
You know what? I'm glad that you said that because we're disappointed that the worm is not here as well.
We need him to feel bad.
Yeah, we need him to feel bad because he chose Florida and his family over this podcast tonight. And, you know, it's not sitting well right up here.
Yeah. No.
John, I hope you got a good sunburn.
Yeah, no kidding. I hope you sunburn your balls. You know,
sunburn your balls off.
So, you know what? We'll talk about the worm.
Let's start on how this started. For the first few podcasts, we've had folks that we sought out on our podcast page. If you want to be a guest, we're more than happy to put you on, and we're kind of feeling this out too. So, you found the web page. You filled out a bio and some information, and we were all standing around like, huh? Look at that! Somebody filled out the page. Well, now what do we do?
Yeah.
So
we kept asking each other, like, okay, wait, do you know him? Is he in a study club? Do you know him?
Yeah. Nope. So this is a little new for us, too. So we're glad you're kind of helping us break the ice on things that we don't know what we're talking about here. So
are you saying this is the first time you've ever done a podcast where somebody actually filled the form out?
No, actually, that
we didn't ask.
No,
first.
We just didn't know who the hell you were.
Well, this is the first time we podcast somebody we really don't know. Yeah. but we've got an hour to. I'm sure we'll be friends at the end of this hour.
Absolutely.
So why don't we start? Tell us a little bit about yourself before you started doing what you're doing now. What a little bit of background.
Well, jumping into why I fill the form out, that'd be a good start. I found out a long time ago if you get invited to do something, you probably ought to go ahead and do it because some good things can happen from doing that. And the first time I filled out a form that somebody sent me was for the Small Business Person of the Year in Gwinnett County, where we are. And our Chamber of Commerce is pretty powerful. They're the number 3 Chamber of Commerce in America last year. And so I applied to this one honor that they give to one person a year. out of 20,000 businesses, and it turned out we won that award as the best business, small business in our area.
Nice.
So I found out you should answer anything that comes in your mail. If they want you to apply, just go ahead and do it.
That's a really good that's a good outlook on on everything, really. But, you know, business, personal relationships, whatever. Just say yes.
Say yes. And I tell my patients, you need to say yes when I tell you what to do.
Well, that's what
I'm sure
supposed
that makes
to
you
do.
A lot of money there.
So, that's one of my secrets to success is I teach my staff to say yes. And if the patient asks them to do something, you just say yes, as long as it's within reason. But let me back up, and I'll tell you more about where I came from. I'm a Atlanta native. I grew up in Atlanta, moved around the South. My dad's a veterinarian, so he had corporate jobs moving around Mississippi, Alabama, Tennessee. When he went off to Maryland and Minnesota, I stayed in the South and went to college. I went to Auburn University, so we're proud of football every other year at Auburn. And I went to the Medical College of Georgia. Graduated in 1975. So I've been doing this thing for 40 years, and I'm still practicing 2 days a week. I built several large practices and sold them, and now I'm enjoying working 2 days a week as an associate, and I teach and have online courses and a mastermind group, and life's not too bad.
Awesome. So when did you start the consulting part of it?
Well, I started teaching back in 1981, but I was teaching TMJ and Reconstruction and Orthodontics back then, and I did that for about 10 or 15 years, and then I kind of took a break and went international, did some multi-level marketing and traveled to Russia and Indonesia and Colombia and Greece. Decided there was no money in that compared to dentistry, so I kind of went back into dentistry and started over at age 48. I actually sold my practice and started over at 48 years old, and we grew our new practice up here in Suwanee. It's about 30 miles north of where I had been in Atlanta suburbs. So I started a new practice and grew it from zero to $5.8 million, adding a half a million a year for 10 straight years. So that's kind of my claim to fame, is that we found a little niche and showed people how to do that. And that's what I teach.
Very nice. Very nice.
So you could only grow a half million a year. What was wrong with you?
I only had three rooms.
There you go. Say, could you do us a big favor, Bill? Could you just take your mic on your headset and pull it away from your collar a little bit? We're getting a little bit perfect.
It was hitting your collar. There
it
you go.
It was hitting your collar. That's it.
Yeah.
I may edit this out. I may not. I don't know.
Yeah, well.
We'll see.
Well, I've got a problem with Bill right away because he said he put down that he was 45 on this sheet, you know, and the math isn't adding up yet. So I haven't, I got my phone and calculator out and it's just not working for me. But
that's a six, not a five.
Oh, okay. All right. That's all right. Yeah. I let you confess on your own. Well, what, tell me about, We trolled you a little bit. Tell us about Suwanee Dental. Looks like you got some associate docs. Are they owner docs? What's the story there?
I built Suwanee Dental and grew it from one to three to four dentists in the practice. I had three associates when I sold it, so I ran the place and built it. And after about 17 years, I decided to sell it. So I've been employed as an associate dentist myself with the other guys for about 3.5-4 years now. So that's where I am. Everybody in the practice now is an associate working as a equal partner.
As the evil partner.
Partner.
Well,
evil partners.
Yeah. I get that. You know, I don't have them all in one roof, but I've got them under different roofs. But I've got I got a great group of you know, young docs that I'll ask you this question, and I feel like I am not speaking out of turn, but I think that one of the things that has been lost in dentistry today is that mentorship. Do your associates feel, I mean, obviously to be that successful, you had to have provided them with a great deal of mentorship.
We put a lot of effort into growing our guys up and bringing them along. And I've had 18 or 20 associates over 40 years. And some stayed with me 8 years, 5 years. Some stayed with me a couple of months. So most of them were probably 5 years or more. And I've only had one or two at a time most of my career. And then right toward the end of my career, I had three associates.
What do you feel is the key to associate happiness?
Autonomy. Give them the opportunity to do everything I do. Not try to make them lesser. Not try to take all the big cases. The way I've always practiced is they get an equal number of new patients to me, and if they can make something out of it, good. If they want to decide to do something on a patient, it's their decision. I'm not going to go and take their patient from them. If they need something that's out of their hands, I can do it because they'll want me to, but I let them refer to me, but I don't make them give me their patient.
What have you done? What did you do poorly that you feel that you do better today in that associate relationship?
If you go out of communication with an associate and there's a problem and you don't address it right away, it's going to fester and it'll turn gangrenous and you'll end up losing the associate every time if you don't deal with it. So an associate will leave pretty quick if they're not happy. Now, they leave if they're happy sometimes because their wife makes them leave. I've had associates left because their wife got pregnant and they want to move back home to mama. I've had associates leave that were women because they got pregnant and didn't want to come back because they had babies. So, I mean, the things you don't control.
Yeah.
But by and large, if the guys are happy, they'll stay with you a long, long time. Nothing's better than being an associate in a very productive practice. I mean, my associates were making $400,000, $300,000 a year. And so they were as productive as any guy that owned the practices around me.
And what's their incentive to buy in if they're making that kind of money?
Most of them never did. I invited a few of them to buy in, and they felt like they couldn't afford it. I don't think they saw the big picture of what was possible. They didn't probably know the inside numbers of the whole practice enough to where they really saw they could afford it. That's probably the number one thing. If somebody buys into a extremely successful practice, their income's going to go up.
Most people feel like they, you know, when they buy in, their income's got to go down. And I happen to agree with yours, is that if you, if you buy into a really successful practice, at the end of the day, truthfully, your share of the hygiene, if you have the right kind of hygiene program, your share of hygiene should cause your income to go up and pay your, way into the practice as well. Do you feel like that's a fair statement?
Oh yeah. That's the chicken feed though. I think, and I've always seen this to be true in our practice, is every associate you add to your practice, you're going to make, as the owner, another $100,000 to $200,000 more profit a year that you take home. So the hygienist is going to give you another $20,000 or $30,000 or $50,000. But the dentist is worth a lot more, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, for sure.
Yeah. A dentist will make you as much as a hygienist team will make you.
What was the biggest aha moment that you ever run across when you went from one practice to another and you're just like, holy crap, why didn't I get this a lot sooner?
Well, I was very successful in the first practice by my own standards and by most people's standards. I was successful in that first practice. But when I moved to the new place and started over, it was in a better location. And so the clientele was a lot better. They were more affluent. And it was a growing area that sustained us very well. So I would say location is number one. You need to have a study of where you're going to move to and do it well. Most people that are setting up new practices today, that do it right will have a demographic study of the area and know exactly what they're going to get before they get there.
I think that's good, wise words.
Yeah. So now you do practice a little bit, but you also a professional consultant. You go out and take a guy that's doing, you know, not happy with what he's doing, and you kind of work with him to grow?
I do. I take people that are a good match to what we do, you know, our niche. I guess we can teach any dentist to be successful, but I like working with a mature dentist who kind of knows a lot but wants to figure out how to do a lot more. So somebody's doing 1 million, I'll teach them to do 2 million. That's that sweet spot. I've got that mastermind going on right now that I'm teaching, and all of the dentists in the group are mature except for one rookie. And that rookie's been out 8 years. And I call him a rookie. Most of them got 30, 40 years. And so we're helping those guys double their practice even at that age.
You know, that's something I've seen. You know, I call on a fair number of offices, and I have some that are going through a consultant, a lot that don't. But until they kind of realize that, you know, they are looking to go someplace other than where they're at, I guess that I think a lot of them are blind to it. But once they open their eye a little bit, it's amazing what some of the consultants have done in the past for some offices. And I'm awestruck sometimes at how they just focus on a few little things, and, you know, the dollars will follow.
I gave a lecture to the group on the first mastermind session we had, and I call the lecture the $10,000 a day dentist, because it's a good round number. And so just because I gave that lecture and it was about 45 minutes, those guys took what I said and went home, and like the first week or two after they got back, they came back and reported that 2 or 3 days of the next week, they were over $10,000. And most of them hadn't done that in months. And all they had to do was implement a couple of things. And you can turn things over really quickly with the right communication skills, the right mindset.
So give us in a nutshell, obviously we're not going to ask you to give away your,
your
trade.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Okay. So, yeah. So you need to tell us in like the next 15 minutes, you know, everything that you know to make us all $10,000 a day dentists. How about a nutshell of what, top three things, the doc does that, he doesn't even know he's doing.
What he's doing.
What's he doing wrong? Or what's he not doing?
What are they doing wrong? Scheduling. Most of it's in the scheduling. When I talk about a $10,000 a day dental practice, not the dentist practice, I'm talking about the dentist in his own operatories, because you can have hygienists doing in a practice, you know, $4,000, $5,000, $6,000. I'm talking about just the dentist doing $10,000 in his operatory per dentist. If you got five dentists, you can have $50,000 days, but depends on your scheduler. But I talk about a concept of readiness and willingness, and I talk about it being something that permeates the whole team, where everybody's got to be on board with what the goal is. And so if everybody's aware of the goal, and I've got an idea called 8 at 8, I want to see 8 cars in the parking lot at 8 o'clock in the morning. If I've got 4 dentists, I want each dentist to have 2 patients in the chair. So I want to have a major appointment and a medium appointment. So it would be a crown prep and a crown seat, or crown prep and a composite. I don't want a root canal against a crown prep, particularly. I would like to stagger those. So I've got an idea what the perfect day schedule is, and every day starts with something really good. And the staff knows that, so I work with 3 assistants, and so I want 3 people in the chair for myself at 8 o'clock. And so if 8 o'clock starts out really well, then I know I'm going to have a great day. I always do the fill-in stuff. I do the yes dentistry, the same-day dentistry. And I can build a day if I don't have a day. Usually my staff is going to bill me about a $10,000 day average on the books. But we'll probably end up doing a lot more.
So you do a lot of same day. If somebody needs something, you got a room, you throw them in there and get started right away, or?
I do. Yeah. I believe same day dentistry is a very valuable tool. It's been taught in a lot of places now. I used to do same day dentistry before it was popular, but I didn't focus on it. I just did it because I wanted to fill the rooms up.
I think that's something for us. You know, my practice is the largest city. I mean, I sit in a town of 80,000, but the general dentistry office is the largest town that sits in is 10,000. And, you know, sometimes these people drive a long distance and come out of hygiene and just need a, you know, a simple filling or even a crown. They're very appreciative of you being cognizant of their time and willingness to get it done without them taking more time off or more travel time. You know, I think that's, you know, sometimes a common courtesy and something, you know, maybe some common sense that we lack once in a while.
You hit the nail on the head when you said it's a convenience factor that you can sell to a patient that they don't even feel like they're being sold. They think you're doing them a favor. They think you're doing, they think they're doing you a favor to stay when really it's the other way around.
For sure. For sure.
You know, some of that though, it's a mindset. I know on some of the newer offices that you do, you sit down, well, I want these as hygiene rooms. And I'm like, you know, let's just set them up all the same. You can do whatever you need to do in whatever room. Mm-hmm. Hygienist or not, she can go to another room. If that patient's sitting there and they need to get started on something, then let's just have the doc walk right in that same room. And it's not frustrating. You sell what, you know, what the guy wants, but you do try to open their eyes to that.
Yeah, it's a beautiful idea having the whole office set up so any operatory can be used for anything. That's beautiful.
Then you can multitask. You know, I think that's something that that you do very well, Justin. You know, multitasking with your scheduling, and you can work on numerous patients at the same time.
Well, I tell people, you know, I have a pretty unique practice. When your practice is limited to dental implants, and your practice is a referral based business, you know, I only have a few amount of appointments. You know, I have consultations. You know, I have surgery, I have uncoveries, and I have, you know, maybe the possible restorative appointment, you know. So for me, you know, those toothaches and composites, and, you know, I don't have a hygienist, so I don't have that check to do. You know, it allows me to be maybe even more efficient because I have, you know, less setups and less things that I need to, you know, to worry about. So, but for sure, what is your... what's your feeling on, do you have CAD/CAM in your office? Do you have same day crowns in your office?
Well, I used to. I don't do them anymore. I wasn't good enough at them to turn them over as fast and as efficient with as good a quality as my lab. So I just stopped doing them, but I've got a unit that's been there for about 10, 12 years. I don't have the latest version, and that's really the whole story. I didn't get trained good enough to be qualified to say they're better than the ones the lab does.
Are you guys placing implants?
Yeah, I've been placing implants for 25 years. So I'll place Bicons, Noble Actives, Osteo Ready, some 3i.
Why the gamut of implants?
Oh, I trained on different ones for different reasons and just happened to like certain features. Some of them are a little more elegant. Some are a little cheaper. Some are a little shorter. Some are fatter. There's a great need for short, fat implants. So I learned to use Bicons a long time ago.
You like that Morris taper on that Bicon?
I love it. It works really, really well.
Yeah, it's just that's a flavor I've just never had. I use the... I'm a Biohorizon guy. I use 100% bio except for do a little bit of Nobel for the Air Force base, and then I do a little bit of Southern. Since bio doesn't have a big wide fatty, I do a little bit of Southern on that. But you have you met the Osteo Ready founder, Brady Frank?
Oh yeah, I've been out to Brady's, trained at his place.
You been out to Medford, Oregon?
I have.
Excellent, excellent.
He's a sharp guy.
Do you have do you have Cone Beam in your office?
I do. I've had a Cone Beam for about seven or eight years now. I use a Plan Mecca combo unit that has a pan and a Ceph and a Cone Beam.
So you mentioned the word Ceph. We got a little same day. We got a little short-term ortho going on in your practice?
No, we got a lot of comprehensive ortho going on.
Gotcha.
I do full braces of every type, just like a regular orthodontist. I trained in 1981 through 86 with the U.S. Dental Institute and then became an instructor with them. So I've been doing full orthodontics with a straight wire, functional, and rapid expansion, all that, for about 35 years.
Well, we do have one little thread of in commonness with us, not just because we place implants, but I did the Maxi course at the old medical college at Georgia. I did it under being in Atlanta, I presume you know the old Ed Mills.
Yeah, the old Ed Mills. I know him. the Panamanian Flash.
Yeah, I did the Maxi course. You know, now that since I've taken it, they've changed their name about a half a dozen times so far. And I did have the pleasure. I don't know if you know an oral surgeon that still teaches there, Butch Ferguson.
Don't know Butch, but I know a bunch of those guys. I was in the first Maxi course at the Medical College of Georgia back when they first started it.
Well, that's where I got some of my education. We did the first one. We did the first two months up at Augusta, and then we ended up at Ed's office down there in Buckhead or Sand Springs or wherever that is.
It's an improved course since when I took it. I mean, it got better and better because they learned more. And when Ed took it over, he really put a lot more into it. It was a lot more hands-on. So it's a great training. I think it's one of the best in the country.
I think so. Not just because I took the thing, but I look at some of the other Maxi courses, and I think that Ed has done a good job with that. So any of your associates doing ortho or implants or anything like that? You got a plan to help mentor them into that, or tell us about that.
I took in the last two associates I took in. I took out of a residency program because I wanted a sedation implant associate. I wanted people who were highly skilled before they came in. And so we got two associates who routinely do IV sedation and implants. One of those is learning ortho. You know, I told him I'm going to get old one day and I'm leaving and you're going to have to do all these ortho cases or they're going to leave the practice. So he's been learning fixed ortho. So we have a training plan in place to replace me when I really get old.
When you really get old. Oh, that's outstanding. That's outstanding.
So if a guy, you know, ortho is one of those things that it just seems like it's pretty hands off in a lot of areas. You get some Invisalign, or every now and then a guy will do a 6 month smile or fast braces. But if a guy does want to take that to the next level, where do you start? And is the revenue that comes off it worth it?
Well, Invisalign is so easy, and it's what everybody's doing now. So you're not going to find too many people going to fixed ortho, is my guess. But there is a certain need for fixed ortho. There are things you can't do with Invisalign. Fast braces and 6 month smiles will come close. Not as comprehensive, but it's, you know, the easy stuff. I feel sorry for the orthodontist out there who are left with all the hard cases. Everybody's taking the gravy and leaving them the hard stuff. What they ought to do is double their prices, because whatever they're doing is worth it.
I think there's a definite difference between conventional ortho and the short-term ortho. Because do you have an opinion between 6 month smiles and fast braces? What about that triangular bracket? What's your opinion on that triangular bracket?
I don't use them, so I don't know enough about them to be an expert. I wouldn't want to tell anybody something wrong.
For sure. I just didn't know if you had any experience in that short term. Just seems like, you know, here in Rapid City, we have we got a fair amount of docs that are starting to, you know, do the short term ortho. And, you know, I look at it as in our offices, we used to have an in-house orthodontist. So, and we still have her across the street. So it's something that we don't do a lot of. We just refer most of it out because we've busy enough to fill it with other things. And, you know, we're pretty implant centric. So,
I think you're smart to do implants over ortho, but when I looked at my production, I did a study of the last 3 months, added up everything I did for 3 months. I think I averaged about 150,000 a month working 2 days a week. And so it was productive, and it was interesting that the top three things I did were restorative cranium bridge, implants, and ortho. And I was surprised that those were higher than my perio oral surgery, taking out teeth type of oral surgery, endodontics, prostodontics. But the fact that ortho was up so high, I expected implants and crown and bridge restorative to be up high. So orthodontics made a pretty good impact on us.
What do you think about the state of the dental schools today?
He laughs.
Yeah. I'm sure he's probably like,
that's not a good sign.
You know, here's, we were talking with Alan Mead at the Dental Hacks, last night. And, we were talking about how the dental schools seem to be run by specialists, and they kind of perpetuate their own
dependency.
I think that's a good word. So I, point in case, I hired a very competent associate. Actually, he'd spent a year at a DSO before he came over to me, and he got out of dental school doing 3 canals. Now, if you've done 3 canals of endo, I couldn't imagine you ever wanting to do endo, you know, especially not wanting to do molar endo. So do you think the dental schools are doing an adequate job of training these docs coming out?
I'll tell you this. None of the associates I've ever hired in the last 10, 15 years knew how to do endo. None of them knew how to do anything complex in crown and bridge. They didn't know any TMJ. None of them knew any ortho, so I don't know what they were training them on, but they all had fear in their eyes when they were told that we do these things. And one by one, they would all get their endo going, and they would get trained, and now every one of my associates does endo like anybody, as good as anybody I see, better than me. So they definitely can do it. A young guy can always do whatever the old guy does if they just put their mind to it.
Yeah,
but I agree with you. I think the protectionism in the dental schools must be pretty rampant because they don't teach them a lot of the expert skills.
And they certainly have time to teach some of them. You know, they have time to impart some pearls and some wisdom in.
Well, they charge enough for it. Do you think they give them a little bit more?
So am I understanding correctly that you guys are saying dental schools are basically leaving some information out to keep a certain specialist employed?
I think you get the theory of operation, but not how the know-how to get it done.
But not the, not the practical skill.
They say it's just not enough time to train them to be good in everything, but, you know, I think you got to go for a little more volume of patient care.
What do you feel about, you know, you haven't had all these associates over time, and I'm sure that you have an opinion on this. From your first associate to your last associate, tell me about the difference in what they may owe in student loans when they get out the door.
My first associate was Bill Gelfond. He came out of Emory University, a private school, and he begged to come into our practice. I didn't even want an associate. And his instructor was a friend of mine, Joe Conselman. And Joe said, I got a guy that's really sharp and you should talk to him. So I was known as a TMJ guy then. So he wanted to come work in a more of a outside the box practice. So I hired him and he stayed with me for 5 years, and it was a great relationship. Probably the nicest guy that I ever employed. So
still friends with him today?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. He's actually passed on. So we parted friends. He went on his own, set up his own practice, and didn't live to about age 40. Had a brain tumor.
Oh, wow.
So, make use of your time. You don't know when it's going to happen.
Isn't that the truth?
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Another and acquaintance of ours.
He came out of school without a big debt, even though he went to a private school.
How about these new guys?
Well, they're in public school, and it's even more atrocious. $200,000 sometimes, $300,000. I can't imagine going to a private school where it's even more.
So a good buddy of mine just hired an associate out of Creighton, and the average indebtedness of a Creighton graduate that went to both undergrad and grad there, so did the 8 years in Omaha, 580.
Wow.
That's a chunk.
So at $580,000.
It's also a crock.
Yeah.
That's going to be a lot of $10,000 days to pay that off.
Well, I'm not sure you can get there. I mean, how do you, having that kind of debt load, how are you going to get to the point where you can buy into your $5 million practice? I mean, that's obviously with some coaching from you, but I mean, that's not an easy task.
Well, that's actually what happened to me. Is I had three fairly young associates. They hadn't amassed any fortune. The older associate had just left, kind of on the retirement track, and he'd kind of burned out after 35 years, came to work with me, got rejuvenated, worked another 15 years, but he thought he was going to retire. But when he did finally leave, I had three younger dentists, and they all just could not see themselves buying my $5 million practice. And so they passed on it. So I sold it to somebody else.
Well,
they had first right of refusal, you know.
You know, it's just it's a lot of money, and I think about in my own situation, you know, how is that how's that gonna work over, you know, over time? But I think things, you know, sort themselves out, and not everybody's cut out to own a practice. And I think that's why, you know, you have the play, you know, you have the Heartlands and the Aspens and those of the world that have a system that they can take in and bring these younger docs maybe into some productivity. But at the same time, these docs don't know what they want to do, and they just need to be. What's your thought on DSOs, the corporate dental world?
Truth is, I are one.
Excellent. Well, tell us about it.
Yeah, I researched them all, and I got a great offer from a number of them, but I've chose Heartland. I decided that I wanted to go with the doctor-led program that let us run our practice without changing our name. So we're basically the same as we were when I was running the place, but now I don't have to run it. I just work in it. And I still get to make all the major decisions, but I don't have to do any of the HR. I don't have to do any of the check writing. I don't have to do anything to collect the money. It's basically done for me, and I just go to work.
Is that a good feeling?
Yeah, it's really good. I mean, after doing what I did for 40 years or 38 years before I sold it, it's a good thing. When you get ready to retire, you can retire on your own terms.
Here's a thought.
Go ahead.
Well, we've Rapid City, South Dakota, and South Dakota in general has they built the first Aspen Dental in Rapid City in November, and everybody freaked out, you know, and the state, you know, and I'm sure that I'll catch a little flack for what I'm about to say, but those that are in organized dentistry here in South Dakota are scrambling to try to make some adjustments to the act to try to keep these things out and to keep them at bay and so forth. And I feel like doing such that many of these doctors don't realize that they are actually decreasing their exit strategy. You know, the options that they have when they come down to their exit. If you take away that kind of structured environment, you know, you might not know what you're missing. And, you know, you're not the only one that we've talked to, nor are you the only one that we know that has a good working relationship with Heartland. Hell, I lost a great husband-wife team at one of my offices to, you know, they wanted to move back to, closer to family. But, you know, they joined Heartland and seemed to be, quite happy with it. So, what's your thoughts on the doc coming out? I mean, is this a good model for them? Is it a better model for a veteran like yourself, or is there room for everybody?
Well, let me put it this way. There's a whale of a difference between the top and the bottom of the DSO world.
For sure.
And so there are some that you wouldn't want to join, and there's some that you would be lucky to be able to join if they take you. That's how good some of the DSOs are. So quality of the dentist in the DSOs is not what the common thought is out there, that they're all schlocky dentists. In our company, anyway, we've got some of the best dentists in the USA. Bruce Baird, Marvin, in Texas.
You got Team Atlanta right there in Atlanta.
Yeah, Goldstein, Garber, and Salama can't be beat by anybody. They're as good as anybody. There's a lot of strong people in the group. I mean, that's not the issue. Heartland's very good for the top and the bottom as far as age. If you're starting out in dentistry and you want to get in without any overhead, you can get started and make, 100, 200. The first years, you can do whatever you want volume-wise. If you want to be an old guy and work your way out of practice, that's the best thing I've found, is you can sell your practice for a good price and then work in it part-time. And you can just work as little or as much as you want. So there's a lot of advantages to that. But there's a couple of things that Heartland's doing that nobody knows about outside of the Heartland that they're doing is brand new. And they're stimulating each of their members to become masters of the Academy of General Dentistry. And they're working to get their FAGD, MAGD, expert status in implants, expert status in ortho. So there's quite a bit of education that's being pushed through that's going to give us the advantage to, you know, do more dentistry because we just have more education.
Well, you have the opportunity to more education. You have, you have buying power, you have educating power. I mean, those are real things.
What's the trade-off though? I mean, that nothing ever comes for free. I mean, do you feel like the extra profit that you are giving up is worth the benefits that you get?
Well, if I was an associate in a DSO or an associate in, another office, there'd be no question the DSO is better. If I was an owner, ownership has its perks because you get more profits, but you also get the headaches and you get the debt when it doesn't go well.
Yeah.
So there's both sides to it, but I made a lot of profit as an owner for a lot of years, and I'm still making a lot of profit as an associate, but I'm not working very hard. I mean, you know.
Well, that's the way it's supposed to be.
Well, you said 2 days a week?
2 days on, 5 days off is very tough on my psyche.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Well, go ahead.
What am I going to do for two or three more days until it's time to go back to work?
Well, speaking of that, I think there's plenty for you to do in those few days. Quickly as we wind down this has been an awesome hour. Tell us a little about the Solstice Dental Advisors. I presume this is your gig.
I started that about 5-6 years ago. And I've always been instructor, teacher, mentor, done a lot of that over the years, but I never did a lot in practice management. So I wrote a book on the experience I had growing my practice from zero to 5.8 million. And I call it Marketing the $1 Million Practice, which is available on Amazon. And so with that book, it kind of spurred me on to think about, well, what else would I teach people? Not just the marketing aspect, but the systems and the mindset. And so I put together the Solstice name and group because I was part of a group called the Solstice Research Group for about 10 years where we met every 6 months with a group of dentists in a mastermind setting. And we just figured out how to do dentistry better. And that's how I built the practice to that quick by implementing some of the things we learned in the Solstice group. So when I wanted to start teaching, I named it after the Solstice group I'd been in. I put together 12 modules that are online so that people can go through it at their pace 24/7, 365, and they go through and learn kind of the steps that I went through to grow the practice and all the systems we used. So that's kind of how I got started. And then this year, we put together a mastermind where people are meeting here at my home, and we're having about 8 or 10 people in the room talking about dentistry and how we do it. And it's just a real nurturing, a collaborative effort.
That's
my story.
Well, this advisor, I mean, you can't do all this by yourself. You got a team that goes out there and helps you in the field?
A little bit. We went out in the field for a couple of years with in-office consults, and I got a few going on right now in Phoenix and some places, but that's not really my sweet spot. So the team that I have, basically, we don't want to go out and do in-office consults as our main business model. So what we do mostly is the online and the mastermind.
So who's your target? I mean, folks that are listening now, you know, it's not the guy right out of school, but kind of give a profile of the guy that where your sweet spot is.
Somebody who's probably 40 to 65. Somebody who knows that they want to figure out how to finish well. And that's what we do. We help people who are successful be better. Guys that used to do 90,000 and fell down to 60,000 a month, they want to get back to over 100. That'd be a group that I would talk to. That means individual dentist. And I've got a couple of group practices that are doing 300,000 or 400,000 a month, and they'd like to grow. So anything that is from 1 to 6 million, we've consulted with.
Nice.
We're not trying to fix broken practices as much as we're trying to help people who are fairly healthy and want to go further.
So you're really looking for the doc that is doing well. You know, he's driving the car he wants. He's going to the country club that he wants. But he instead of retiring at 60, maybe he wants to shut her down at 55. Wants to take that. You know, maybe wants that. Here in South Dakota, maybe wants that Phoenix home for November through March. Is that a little bit in your wheelhouse there?
It is. Yeah, we've got a lot of those kind of guys that we talk to, and they're really hungry to do better just because they know they can. If you've seen it done before, it's probably possible, said Omer. So I teach what Omer taught me.
What's the biggest screw up a dentist might make in marketing?
Not being repetitive, doing a one shot deal, thinking he's going to make it.
What is your? With that said, I've heard that more than once. I've been listening to enough of these marketing podcasts on my drive, you know, to work. And there's people that say, hey, you need to use the same message and just hit it over and over and over. And then there's people that say, well, you need to change it periodically. You know, they all agree, like you said, you know, that you
frequency.
Can't. Yeah, frequency. You know, you got to be out there because sometimes your absence is noticed more than your presence in that field. But what's your take on that kind of marketing?
Frequency is very important, and stick to, and if you stick to something that's working, change, measure your ROI on everything you do. So you always, you double down on the winners and you cut the losers. I've been on radio, low cost Christian radio, where it's not getting those big bucks, but I'm an underwriter. So I've been on that for like 12 years, and I've been on, this magazine, local magazine, is a featured writer, featured advertiser. They do stories on us. So I'm in the magazines all the time with articles. But the website's always been the thing that drove most of our patients to us, having a good online presence. Started back in 1997 with a website.
Isn't that – I just feel – I feel like if a dentist has if a dentist has one of those canned websites, I just feel like that's not, you know, it's got to be good. You know, yeah. I happen to agree with you. I think the website, it's not just, you would hope that everybody, you know, has a website today. And I'd probably be a little leery.
I'd probably surprise a number of guys that don't. Or,
I'd probably be a little leery of going to a dentist that didn't have a website. Yeah. But
I think dentists have to realize that websites, it's worth the investment. It's not a business card, you know. Don't treat it as a business card. Treat it as an extension of your business. You know?
I agree.
You know. Go with videos on your website, testimonials. Personalize it.
Yeah.
I also think that you know what most dentists do that is an easy trap to fall into is no new content. You know, you build the damn thing. Yeah. You build the thing, and then you never revisit it. And you know, there's nothing more. I think there's nothing more frustrating than coming to a website and the testimonial is like 3 years old, and you're just like,
well, just know. Think about what message that sends your potential and current customers. You know, your patients. You know, if you never touch your website and you have outdated stuff, you know, what's to say that you're on the top of your game dental wise? You know.
You need a Jeff in your practice.
Hey, trust me. If you've gone on to the dentistimplantsandworms.com website, it's phenomenal. It's multi, you know, there's multi facets on there, lots of media players, and it's just been I have to tell you, but we have a hell of a lot of fun doing these podcasts.
Yeah.
This is good stuff. This is super good stuff. Well,
and even more fun now that we're connecting with new dentists, you know, that we don't know.
You know, I was in the Twin Cities this weekend, and I was a 2-day lecture on guided implant surgery. And one of the people asked me, like, couldn't you make more money being in your own practice than you could lecturing? And I was like, well, you know, yeah, you probably could. However, I wouldn't have got to meet 20 new people, and I wouldn't have got to hang out, you know, I wouldn't have got to dinner. I wouldn't have been able to hang out with them at the bar afterwards. And, I wouldn't have received the 4 or 5 emails that I've had in the last 2 days, from, people that attended just that were willing to drop me a note and say, hey, they enjoyed the course. And, truthfully, that's worth what, you know, that's worth. I don't do it for the money. I do it because I love to teach and I love to meet new people.
But there's a good chance that guy probably doesn't work Fridays, and on Wednesdays he cuts out early too, just cause. So he's, you know.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Bill, I can't tell you how fun it's been this evening. You know, it was pretty awesome to have somebody fill out our form that we didn't know.
Absolutely.
And, you know, we trolled you and Facebook stalked you and website stalked you. And we're like, you know, this guy's got a little something going on. We need to pick his brain. And we've picked it for 54 minutes so far. And I feel like, you know, we could have gone another 54. You're very gracious in spending your late night evening with us on the podcast. Wealth of information. All your stuff will appear in the show notes. So if you don't mind, we'll have your email address on there for people to drop you a note if they have any more questions. Your website will be on there as well. And
if you make it to South Dakota, drop us a line. We'll take you up to Mount Rushmore and maybe
absolutely
find a
we'll
cocktail.
Stay in touch.
My wife wants to go to South Dakota, and Mount Rushmore is on her bucket list. So, you know, I'll have to take you up on that.
Bring her the second week of October or August. She'll dig it.
Yeah.
We do this little thing with a whole bunch of motorcycles up here. It's the damnedest thing you ever saw.
I know it.
Well, anyway, Bill, again, it's a pleasure to meet you. We count you on our Dentists and Implants and Worms friends list. Please tell your friends to take a listen, and you'll be out shortly. So from Studio 1A in downtown Rapid City, South Dakota, this has been the Dentist Implants and Worms, episode number 8 with Dr. Bill Williams.
Hope
thanks
to see
again.
You down the road. Thank you.
Enjoyed it, guys. Thank you, Justin.
You bet. Again. Take care.
See ya.
Well, what do you think, guys? What do you think about Bill Williams down in Atlanta, Georgia?
I think that was great. That was great that he reached out to us. And
yeah, how cool was that? That was.
I feel like we're famous.
No kidding. Hey, and anyone, you know, anybody interested in joining our podcast gang for a session, for an episode, go to our website at www.dentistimplantsandworms.com. At the very bottom, you will see an application to be on the podcast. Click it, fill it out, submit it, and just like Dr. Bill Williams tonight, you too could be on the Dentist Implants and Worms.
And we were fairly friendly, I hope.
I hope so.
Well, for not being friends before, I would think we were friends today.
Yeah. Tell you what, listeners, if you think we were not friendly, send us a Facebook message.
Yeah.
Tell us
we're
assholes.
More hostile.
Yeah.
We
didn't
know if we...
I would hope we're not hostile.
Maybe we should be hostile.
I only want... What about our nemesis?
We'll be fucking hostile with them.
Yeah, they know who they are. They know. For sure they know. Anyway, yeah. Make sure if you're listening to the podcast and you like what you heard, hell, even if you want to tell people you don't like what you hear, put her on Facebook. You can catch us at Facebook. You can catch us on Twitter. You can catch us on the website itself. We really would like to hear from you.
Review us on iTunes.
Absolutely.
Since we're on there now, finally.
Finally.
Shit. Should we review ourselves?
We don't want to be those guys.
Yeah, I don't want to be those guys. You know, I think
we'll leave that for our nemesis.
Yeah, I think they do that.
Finest podcast I ever skipped over.
Yeah. Right. I think that does it. Studio 1A has been active this week. We've got some great episodes coming out. Stay tuned. We release on
Tuesdays and Fridays.
So subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Pocket Casts.
Well, you're right about this studio getting... We got a mess going on in here.
We got empty goose bottles. We got Caesar's pizza. I mean, we're...
You know, and in full disclosure, I am not partaking in the vodka sodas. I'm kind of a Shinerbach... Yeah.
Well, you were on Michelob last night. Now you're onto the Shinerbach.
So it's a lightweight.
They're stacking up.
Yeah, we got to get... Well, we got to get the refrigerator in here.
We have to get a fridge. We have to get shelves.
Yeah, I feel like it's getting naked in here now. We're spending enough time in here.
It's a little awkward.
Is it getting naked in here? Or are we supposed to be naked in here? That's just, I'm not sure if I'm
you know, I don't,
so is it changing from 1A to just the naked studio?
I don't think anybody wants that Skype.
No, nope. Probably not. Well, it depends on who's on the other end of the Skype, I guess.
Absolutely.
What was that song you were whistling?
Oh, I got the song.
Yeah?
I do. You know, several years ago at Sturgis at the motorcycle rally, I got to hear him in person. And why don't we...
Was that the one that your wife had a ringtone of that, and you guys were at something pretty serious, and her purse just starts... one of the words in this song
please tell
is
me you were at a funeral.
No, no. But I think how many guys have this Buck Cherry as their wife or their girlfriend's ringtone? I'm going to send us out of here with Buck Cherry, Crazy Bitch.
Ah, I fucking knew it. I knew it.
I know it. Until next time, this is the end of episode 8. We'll see you at episode 9. Take care. Peace out.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Down, you got a lovely face. We're going to your place, and now you got to freak me out. Scream so loud, getting fucking laid. You want me to stay, but I got to make my way. Hey, you're crazy bitch, but you fuck so good I'm on top of it. When I dream, I'm doing you all night. Scratches all down my back to keep me right on. Hey, you're crazy bitch, but you fuck so good I'm on top of it. When I dream, I'm doing you all night. Scratches all down my back to keep me right on. Take it all, the paper is your game. You're jumping bed with fame. Another one not paid in full. You're so fine, it won't be a loss. Cashing in the rocks, just to get you face to face. Hey, you're crazy bitch, but you fuck so good I'm on top of it. When I dream, I'm doing you all night. Scratches all down my back to keep me right on. Hey, you're crazy bitch, but you fuck so good I'm on top of it. When I dream, I'm doing you all night. Scratches all down my back to keep me right on. Crazy bitch, crazy bitch. Hey, you're crazy bitch, but you fuck so good I'm on top of it. When I dream, I'm doing you all night. Sketches all down my back to keep me right on. Hey, you're crazy bitch, but you fuck so good I'm on top of it. When I dream, I'm doing you all night. Sketches all down my back, come on. Baby girl, you want it all. Star, you have to go down. Take it off, no need to talk. You're crazy, but I like the way you fuck me. Hey, you're crazy bitch, but you fuck so good I'm on top of it. When I dream, I'm viewing you all night. Scratches all down my back to keep me right on. Hey, you're crazy bitch, but you fuck so good I'm on top of it. When I dream, I'm viewing you all night.